Chapter 16. Darwin led us on a merry chase across some rough terrain, and the horses weren't the only ones starting to flag when we finally stopped the ATV and pointed toward a small town. It sat at the foot of a mountain between the forested slope and a wide, flat river.
"We can hole up there for the rest of the night," Darwin suggested. "Head out in the morning before people get too curious about who we are."
"Are you going to take the ATV into the town?" I asked as my horse snorted impatiently. It could smell the water and the town and probably hoped that a warm stall was in its near future.
"We'll just tell anyone who asks that it runs on magic," Darwin replied. "Who wouldn't believe that?"
We wound our way down a rocky hillside toward a wooden bridge that spanned the river. There was no guard at the bridge and only a simple barricade of sharpened logs around the town. A drowsy officer did appear as our odd caravan came to a halt in front of the blockade that protected the entrance to the town, and he rubbed his eyes in disbelief when he took in the ATV.
"Here, what's all this?" the man demanded.
"Sorry to arrive so late,"
Sorsha replied in a deep, soothing voice.
"But we were delayed. The inn has been expecting us."
The officer looked at the Irishwoman in surprise, then he slowly nodded.
"They've been expecting you at the inn," the officer said. "Sorry to hear you were delayed."
"There may be someone following us,"
the mage continued,
"from a place called Motown. If they appear, you'll deny that we were here."
"I'll tell them you're not here," the guard assented.
"Now, let us through,"
Sorsha instructed. The man rubbed his eyes one more time, then slowly moved the barricade aside. There was just enough room for the ATV to slip through, but soon we were all inside the barricades and moving down the only street wide enough for the ATV and horses to ride side by side. The inn was easy to spot. It was the only building that still had a light on outside it. It was a flickering mage light that lit up a sign with an image of a woman with a blackbird on her shoulder. The woman looked pleasant enough, but the blackbird had a malevolent glare that seemed to follow you no matter where you went.
"What an odd sign,"
Sorsha mused.
"I can't decide if they're welcoming us or telling us to go away."
The sound of the horses and the ATV had drawn a pair of sleepy-eyed boys from the stables next door to the inn. They gawked at the ATV and ignored the horses, even when Sorsha's mount leaned over and tried to bite one of the boys.
"Are there any rooms left?"
Sorsha asked pleasantly when one of the boys finally turned to look at the horses.
Only just," the boy replied around a yawn. "Everyone's come to town for the harvest festival tomorrow, but there's some space left in the attic."
"Beggars can't be choosers," Darwin muttered. "I'll just tuck the ATV into the barn and make sure everything is secure. You three see what they have left."
Sorsha and I dismounted and handed our reins to the stable hands. The boys accepted their charges and even offered each horse a carrot before leading them toward the stables.
"Hold up," I called out, as Darwin started to follow the horses. "Let us just grab our packs."
Sorsha and I poked around under the tarp until we found our packs, then stepped back to watch Darwin as he tried to navigate past the barn doors with the ATV. The vehicle managed to squeeze through, and then I heard several of the horses inside nicker in disapproval of the new arrival. Our arrival hadn't aroused just the stable boys, however. Before I could place my hand on the inn's front door, it was opened halfway, and an older version of the woman on the sign peered around the edge of the door at us. The wavy brown hair had threads of gray, and the heart-shaped face was a little rounder, but the hazel eyes and plump lips were still the same.
"We heard you might have some rooms for the night," I said quietly.
"There's three of you?"
the woman asked as she studied us.
"Four, actually," I replied. "Our companion is just tending to the horses."
"I've got two rooms left in the attic,"
the woman replied.
"You'll have to double up."
"That's fine," I replied.
The woman looked us over again, then opened the door the rest of the way. She disappeared into a dimly lit foyer and left us on the doorstep. I exchanged an uncertain look with Freya and Sorsha, then followed the woman inside.
"So, you want the last two rooms?"
the woman asked from behind a counter where she had retreated. The innkeeper pulled out a ledger and made a quick notation, then pushed the book toward us.
"How much for the rooms?" I asked as I remembered the stable hand's mention of the harvest festival.
2 silvers for both,"
the woman asserted. I exchanged another glance with Sorsha, and I heard Freya choke back a snort in disbelief.
That seems pretty pricey for a pair of rooms in the attic, I replied.
The festival is tomorrow,
the woman explained with a sniff of disdain.
And there aren't any other rooms in town.
Fine, we'll take it, I huffed as I pulled the required coins from my pouch.
I just need one of you to sign for the rooms,
the woman added as she bit the edge of one of the coins. Sorsha picked up the pen and wrote the name Ava Long in a looping script.
Lovely name,
the woman mused as she pulled the ledger back to her side of the counter.
Here are your keys. Just take the stairs all the way to the top and then follow the hallway to the end. You'll see another set of stairs back there. Those will take you to the attic. Your rooms are the last two on the left.
Darwin stepped inside and gave the woman a quick nod.
We got rooms?
The ex-trooper asked. Two, I replied, in the attic.
Well, I guess there's a couple of ways we could do this, Darwin mused. But the proper thing is to let the girls share a room.
Gramps.
I'm a light sleeper, by the way,
Darwin added as he scooped up both sets of keys and started toward the stairs.
It'll be fine,
Sorsha assured both me and Freya.
It will give us girls a chance to talk.
Neither Freya nor I must have looked quite as happy with the proposed sleeping arrangement because Sorsha gave us both a reassuring pat on the arm and then followed Darwin's heavy tread as he marched up the stairs.
I guess I'm sleeping with Charles,
I sighed as I followed the mage and the ex-trooper.
Have fun with that,
Freya teased as she moved lightly up the stairs behind me. I followed Sorsha's golden locks to the top floor of the inn, then down the long, narrow hallway past several doors. I could hear snores and quiet conversations behind most of them, and the heavy pounding of sex behind the last one. And then we trudged up a set of narrow steps barely wide enough for a foot, and found ourselves in an even narrower space with a line of closely spaced doors. Darwin had stopped in the middle of the hall to peer at the keys and then the numbers on the doors. Sorsha swept up to him and quietly retrieved the keys, then made her way to the end of the hall. She opened both doors and, after a moment, selected one for herself. As the rest of us dragged ourselves to the end of the hall, she grabbed Freya by the arm and pulled her inside.
See you in the morning,
the Irishwoman whispered as she closed the door. I peered into the second room after I pulled the key from the lock. The bed was a little better than a cot, and the ceiling was so low that both Darwin and I would have to stoop down just to get inside. With a sigh, I stepped into the room and dropped onto the far side of the bed. Darwin joined me a moment later, and we both quickly stripped down to our undergarments and scrunched up under the thin blanket without another word being uttered. I could hear the low murmur of conversation in the women's room. But other than that, the attic was oppressively quiet. I tried to ignore the back pressed against mine, and somehow I fell asleep, even though I was convinced that I would be awake the rest of the night. The sun was already up by the time I stirred, though I only knew that from the light that managed to sneak in through the thin crack between some of the planks. I stretched as I tried to work out some of the kinks, and then realized that I was the only one in the room. I glanced around in the paltry light and saw that Darwin had already dressed and collected his gear. I found the indoor bathroom on the floor below, and after waiting in the hall for a wannabe stage performer to finish his solo in the shower, finally managed to duck inside and get cleaned up. There wasn't much water left, but I didn't feel like waiting for the tank to refill either. I did the best I could and managed to remove the grime and sweat in record time. By the time I stepped back into the hall, the smell of bacon and coffee had started to drift up from the kitchen. My stomach growled in appreciation, and I scurried back to the room, where I threw on some clean clothes, then gathered up my own gear and headed downstairs. I found Darwin at a table near the dining room's largest window. It overlooked the street we'd ridden down the night before, and even from the lobby doorway I could see people walking up and down the street, most dressed in their best clothing. Sunlight filled the street and poured through the window, giving everything a warm, hazy glow, including Charles. How long have you been up? I asked as I slipped into the chair across from him.
About half an hour, Charles replied. I woke up when the cook arrived and started banging around in the kitchen. I just ordered some coffee and breakfast, whatever that is. Apparently they don't do menus on busy days like today.
Well, I smell bacon, so that's a good sign, I declared.
Can't go wrong with bacon, Charles agreed with a grin. Ah, and here come the ladies.
I turned around to see Freya and Sorsha approach the table,
Both looked fresh, clean, and golden, and aside from a bruise along Freya's right cheek, you would never know that she had been arrested and spent time in jail.
Something smells good,
Freya said as she and Sorsha sat down.
Well, the waitress should be back soon with my plate, so you can order your own then, Darwin replied.
On cue, I saw the door to the kitchen swing open, and a teenage girl with orange hair and a line of pimples along her chin darted over to our table and dropped a plate in front of Darwin. It was loaded with bacon, toast made with a dark pumpernickel, fried eggs, and a small bowl filled with blueberries and blackberries. A collection of jam jars and a giant mug of coffee were deposited as well as the waitress took in our appearances.
The rest of you want breakfast?
She asked in a nasally toned voice. Yes, the three of us replied. And I'll have coffee, I added.
Tea for me,
Sorsha quickly interjected.
Do you have any juice?
Grapefruit,
the waitress suggested with a shrug.
That will be good.
The waitress nodded and scurried over to another table as three more guests took their seats at a table.
So you know Chief Parker? I said quietly a few moments later.
Will he follow us all the way here?
Eventually, Darwin admitted. But he'll give us time to pack up and leave town before he gets here. All he needs to do is tell everyone back in Morristown that we've fled the area and he can go back to rounding up the drunks on Saturday night. He has no interest in a shootout.
But he sent that deputy out to the house,
Sorsha pointed out.
He was hoping to catch me off guard and drag me in before I could arm myself, Darwin said with a shrug. But now he knows he'll have to face a barrage of bullets if he gets too close.
Well, it's not like we can sneak out with the ATV, I mused. So I would suggest we leave as soon as we finish breakfast.
Sally, that's the waitress, Darwin replied. She said that a lot of the farmers are here for this harvest festival. Most of the crops have already been brought in, and everybody's been busy either with drying or the preserving. Officially, yesterday was the last day of the harvest, so today they celebrate with a big community meal, and then the local mage will offer a blessing on the lands for the winter.
Sounds nice, but I'm with Hex. I say we leave as soon as we finish breakfast.
Same here,
Freya added.
I wasn't going to suggest we stay, Darwin replied as he held up his hands. I was going to say that the roads are apparently going to be busy, so if we want to leave with a minimum amount of attention, we should probably use the ridge road that the stable boys told me about this morning.
The waitress returned at that point and placed three more breakfast plates on the table along with our beverages. I passed out the drinks Sally had left behind, and then started on my breakfast. It was all good, though the bacon really did turn out to be the best part. It was just thick enough that it crisped up nicely without turning into brittle sticks of burnt meat, and just soft enough that I could fold it into a slice of buttered toast. It had been smoked with applewood, so the flavor was soft and subtle, but still managed to stand up to the fried eggs and wickedly dense coffee. At some point, Darwin asked for a refill of the bacon and the drinks, both of which arrived at our table just as we polished off our meals. We nibbled on the fresh bacon and sipped at our drinks and watched the locals start to fill the main road. When we couldn't delay any longer, we gave up our table to a family of five and moved back through the restaurant toward the lobby. The owner gave us a quick smile as we passed the desk, though I'm not sure she really registered who we were. She was busy fielding questions from three different groups and trying to issue instructions to one of the maids, so we stepped outside into a bright, sunny day without anyone even noticing. I saw Darwin reach into one of the inner pockets of his jacket and pull out something that reminded me of the eye protection he had worn at the treehouse. But these were dark, and the glass along the front completely shielded his eyes so that no one could see them. I noticed that the strange raccoon pattern around his eyes matched the frames, and I gave the ex-trooper a questioning look.
Sunglasses, Darwin explained. One of mankind's best damn creations, and it's a shame no one makes them anymore.
Evan had something similar, but his weren't dark, I noted.
His are regular glasses, Darwin said. They help correct his vision, but they don't block sunlight.
And yours do? I asked.
Here,
Darwin offered as he took off the sunglasses and handed them to me.
Just take a quick look.
I slipped the two long pieces over my ears as I had seen Darwin do, then let the darker plastic, I realized rather than glass, slip in front of my eyes. The day instantly went from being sunlit to something a little less bright. Not dimmer, exactly, but the harsh edge that made me squint was gone. "Huh, these are great," I said as I peered around at the street.
"Don't you start. I think they look silly."
"But I can see so much better," I replied. "Yep," Darwin agreed. "Another thing I've been hoarding." I took them off and handed them to Sorsha, who slipped them on for a moment.
"Oh, I didn't realize just how bright it was, but it does make it easier to see."
"Well, maybe we'll get lucky and find some more," Darwin said as he held out his hand.
Sorsha reluctantly returned the sunglasses to him and he put them back on. The sunglasses drew a few quizzical looks, but most people simply nodded and smiled as they walked past. We slipped along the edge of the road and walked into the stables where the stable boys were cleaning the stalls. Our two steeds whickered as we approached and even nudged against us without biting. I patted both on their heads and then stood back to give both horses a good look for the first time.
"They did rather well last night, running along in the dark at full gallop,"
Sorsha commented as she scratched behind the ear of the bay with a white blaze down his face.
"They did great," I agreed, "once they decided they didn't hate us."
Sorsha laughed, then ducked beneath my arm to grab the tack that the stable boys had left nearby. We started to ready our mounts while Darwin loaded the last of the gear onto the ATV and Freya added more oil. We were ready to roll on when I saw one of the stable boys suddenly stop what he was doing, then grab his friend and push him back inside the stable. He slammed the barn door shut and threw the wood bar into the handles.
"What the hell?"
Darwin demanded as the stable went dark.
"Something's happening at the festival," the stable boy replied in a panicked voice. "I can hear people screaming and such."
I looked at Darwin, and then we moved to the small side door. Darwin opened it a few inches, then pushed it open the rest of the way when nothing happened. He and I stepped outside and waited for a moment, and then I heard it as well. People were indeed screaming, but I could also smell something burning. A moment later, I saw smoke curl up toward the sky as the bell started to toll in the fire tower, and then it abruptly stopped.
"Shit," I muttered. "Is it mages?" "Not their style," Darwin replied. "They usually don't attack until they've got their enemy in their sights."
"I'll bet it's the berserkers,"
the shorter stable boy added from the door. He couldn't have been much older than 12, with a thick thatch of black curly hair and two soft brown eyes.
"What the hell are berserkers?" Darwin asked. "I know what they are in Norse myth, but I didn't realize we had any running around New Jersey."
The boy stared at Darwin in confusion, and I could tell Darwin's statement had raised so many questions that the boy had forgotten what Darwin had even asked.
"What are berserkers?" I pressed. "They live in the valley between the hills," the boy finally replied. "They're like mutants, but they can claim they're better than mutants because they were made by scientists in the old days, before the meteorite."
"And why would they attack?" I asked, as flames suddenly shot into the air and the screams became louder.
"They go around and try to steal food after the harvests," the boy replied. "Usually they sneak in at night, but the last couple of years they started attacking the towns during the day and taking whatever they could carry. Last year they hit Cedarville and took almost all the grain and some of the kids. Everyone chipped in and sent what they could spare, but a lot of people had to leave the town or starve."
Another explosion rumbled down the street, and Darwin and I exchanged glances.
"It wouldn't take us that long," I suggested. "We could still be gone before Chief Parker gets here."
Darwin nodded and retreated back inside the barn where Freya already had the tarp off the back of the ATV. The old trooper pulled out his own Glock and Winchester rifle, then looked at Freya. She held up the Glock I had created for Sorsha and gave a quick nod in response. I added the Ruger 22 and my Colt to the mix, which seemed like a lot of firepower to unleash on such a small town, but the screams had become more frantic and desperate, and I had a feeling that we would need every bullet with the berserkers.
"Do you want the revolver?"
I offered Sorsha as she pulled the bow and quiver from the ATV.
"No,"
she replied with a shake of her head.
"I think I need a weapon I feel comfortable with."
I nodded, and then the four of us turned toward the door. The stable boys stood nearby, mouths open and eyes wide.
"You're going to attack them?"
the one with black hair asked.
"We are,"
I assured him.
"Are those guns?" the smaller one with sandy blonde hair nearly whispered.
They are,
Freya told him.
But you can't tell anybody.
We won't,
both boys said at the same time. Freya nodded to the two kids, and then we slipped back outside. The back door opened into an alley that ran along the back of the business. It was littered with old crates, broken bottles, and more than one stray cat. It also led to the small green where the festival was to take place, so we ran along its length as fast as we dared, until we reached the point where it merged with the main cross street. I peered over Darwin's shoulder once we reached the edge of the last building, and I felt a wave of anger as I took in the destruction. Tables were shattered and bodies were strewn around the green, while flames crept up the walls of nearby buildings. It wasn't hard to find the source of all the trouble, either. The local deputies and the town mage were locked in combat with a group of people, all dressed in the same black pants and shirts. While one black-clad group of invaders fought with the deputies, a second group carried sacks of grain from the town mill, while a third group raided the cold storage facility. The stable boy had been right. If these marauders succeeded, there wouldn't be enough food left to sustain the town through the winter, and the deputies and mage were clearly outmanned. The invaders were swift and could move from spot to spot in the blink of an eye, while the deputies were still lifting their swords. The town mage fought with every spell he knew, but the fact was that he was primarily a land mage, and most of what he knew was of little help against this brand of evil. I'll head over to that wagon, I said to Darwin, as I stepped out from the alley.
Right, I'll cover you,
he replied, as he lifted the Winchester. I dodged across the street to a small green grocer whose storefront was just starting to burn. A wagon had been left in front and decorated with paper cutouts of various fruits and vegetables. A pile of pumpkins were stacked in the back, all painted with a smiling face for some reason. I heard footsteps behind me as I ran and glanced over my shoulder. Sorsha was right behind me, her first arrow already on the string. I gave her a quick smile, but the sound of the Winchester firing brought my attention back to the street. One of the berserkers must have seen us sprint from the alley, and two of them had slipped past the guards and started after us. The whip-crack sound of Darwin's rifle froze everyone else in place for a moment as one of the black-clad figures twisted sideways, then collapsed to the ground in a spray of blood. While the berserkers and the locals looked around, Sorsha and I made it to the wagon. I peered around the edge of the wagon just as the second berserker looked up from the body of his companion, then let out a blood-curdling yell. It wasn't a word, just a harsh sound that made my blood run cold. The berserker started forward again, and then it was my turn to open fire. I lined up the Ruger, and when the berserker started to leap into the air, I pulled the trigger. The less dramatic sound of the Ruger snapped through the cold air, and before the berserker could change his course, the bullet found its mark on his face. The berserker tumbled to the ground, like an acrobat that had made a misstep. There was blood splattered across his face, and his tongue hung from his mouth. I thought there was a froth at first, and then I realized the white I could see were the remains of his teeth.
"Cover me," I told Sorsha as I ducked behind the wagon. "I'm going to try and get closer."
Sorsha merely nodded, then crept to the other edge of the wagon. She spotted two more of the berserkers who had started to move toward the bodies of their comrades. She launched her first arrow, then quickly sent a second one on its way as well. When I looked around the wagon for another assessment, two more bodies laid on the green, these with arrows sticking out of their chests.
"Good shooting,"
I remarked with a grin just as the boom of Darwin's Winchester filled the air again. With that, I ran from behind the wagon toward the scene of the battle. I raised the rifle as I ran, an easy thing to do with the .22, and pulled the trigger as soon as I had a bead on a black-clad figure. The Winchester boomed again as well, and two more berserkers fell to the ground. The locals seemed to realize that they suddenly had help, and some of the guards managed to cheer. But there were still too many strangers in black, and the sound of metal clanging against metal soon filled the air again. The berserkers, for their part, had quickly spotted both me and Darwin, and we both faced a handful of angry raiders charging toward us. I stopped paying attention to the sound of the Winchester and focused on my incoming horde. I took down the first two quickly as they led the charge toward me. They dropped within seconds of each other and left a large pool of blood in the dirt and grass, but the others scattered and tried to approach me from as many different directions as they could.
An arrow whipped through the air then and caught a third berserker in the side of the head. I saw him manage two more steps before he sank to the ground, but that was all I had time to see. The berserkers were moving far faster than a normal human, and now that they knew where the shots were coming from, they zigged and zagged and tried to make it difficult for me to get off a good shot. My next bullet only clipped a berserker in the side, and she fell to her knees as she grabbed at her wound. Blood flowed between her fingers, and she let out one of those odd, chilling screams that was soon taken up by the rest of the berserkers. I tried not to shiver as I focused on my next target, but it was a sound that would have sent most sensible men looking for a good hiding spot. Instead, I picked out a large man with purple hair who seemed to hop from place to place like an oversized frog. It was hard to get a good shot at him, and my first bullet cracked into the trunk of a tree as he bounded away from my sights. Frustrated, I had to fire at another berserker who had closed in quickly on my spot. It was a woman with a short braid and two long blades, and she was nearly on top of me before I was able to shift the rifle and find my target. In fact, she was so close, I could almost see the bullet dig through her forehead and into her skull. A black hole formed in the center, and blood began to trickle from the wound. She looked at me for a moment, then slowly fell sideways. The alarm bell started to sound, and I knew I only had one more shot left in the Ruger. I scanned the area and tried to find the frogman again. I spotted him as several quick popping sounds joined the noise in the streets, and I realized that Freya had used a Glock. The frogman turned toward the new sound, and he was finally still long enough that I could lock onto my target and fire a good shot. I felt the bullet clear the barrel, and then the Ruger 22 vanished from my hand. But the frogman keeled over like a ship listing to one side, and I saw a small puddle of blood start to seep through his shirt and dribble to the ground. I felt a small moment of triumph, and then I pulled the Colt from my jacket, just as another pair of arrows whistled into a pack of berserkers. Someone in the gang of raiders must have decided that it was too much trouble to continue the attack because the berserkers started to pull back. They didn't run, but they started to move quickly back toward the bridge. A few still carried food supplies while others grabbed whatever loot they could. One slender woman with a pair of red braids had a girl of about 6 tossed over her shoulder. The girl cried and squirmed, but she couldn't break free from the woman's grasp. An arrow embedded itself in a post near the woman's head, but she ignored it and kept moving toward the bridge. I glanced back and saw that Sorsha had lined up another arrow, but I could tell by the Irish woman's frown that she was concerned about hitting the girl by accident. I darted from my spot so I could follow the retreating band of berserkers and made sure that I kept an eye on the woman with the braids. When I finally had a clean shot, I fired the Colt at her back. The bullet smashed into the berserker near the kidneys. The savage woman stumbled forward one step, then fell to the ground, face first. I saw the girl crawl away from the woman's body, and I felt a moment of panic when I saw the blood on the girl's dress. But the girl scrambled to her feet, slipped around the grasping hand of another berserker, and ran into the arms of the nearest guard. At last, the berserkers were in full retreat, and most of them did start to run. They left a trail of dropped food and stolen goods as they hightailed it toward the far side of the bridge, and arrows whizzed through the air until the last bit of black was gone from our sights.
"That was a risky shot,"
Darwin murmured, as we stood at the foot of the bridge and scanned for berserkers. "I know," I admitted, "but I couldn't let her take that girl."
"It's good you took it. I'm just glad you hit the right body. You are a hell of a shot, even though you don't know shit yet."
Thanks, I chuckled.
"Once I get some training in you, you'll be an amazing shot," he clarified.
"I'm looking forward to learning more from you," I said.
"And I'm looking forward to teaching you."
Darwin looked back over his shoulder for a moment, then nudged me.
"I think we should get going, before it starts to sink in what exactly happened here."
I nodded and started back toward the destruction that still littered the town. Some of the women now moved among the bodies, while other townsfolk had started a water line to fight the flames. Yet another group moved across the green and the road to try to save what they could of the food. Sorsha moved among the bodies and reclaimed what arrows she could, while Freya helped bandage some of the townspeople that had been injured. Darwin whistled as the two of us walked back toward the stables, and Freya and Sorsha both looked up. After a few moments, they both picked their way across the green and rejoined us.
We're leaving?
Sorsha guessed.
Seems best, Darwin replied.
We made it as far as the barn doors to the stables, where the two stable boys watched our approach with eager anticipation. The two boys looked as if they'd just witnessed the greatest showdown ever, and I felt myself start to grin in response. But that reaction was quickly squashed when the town mage and a pair of guards stepped in front of us.
"Let me start by thanking you for saving our town," the mage said quietly. He was one of the most ordinary men I had ever seen, and everything about him was some shade of brown, from the shoulder-length hair to the color of his eyes and the tint of his skin.
"We were happy to help," I replied, as I tried to remember how many bullets I had fired from the Colt, and prayed that I wouldn't have to use them.
"But, as a mage, it's my duty to report anyone who I know is carrying a gun," the mage continued unhappily.
"So you're going to arrest us?"
Darwin demanded. One of the guards grunted, and the mage shook his head.
"We're a bit overwhelmed today, and it's too easy for someone to slip away," the mage said with a regretful tone as he looked past us toward the green. "I'll have to summon some rain to help with the flames, though unfortunately that may also hide the tracks of anyone leaving the town."
"That would be unfortunate," I agreed as I glanced at Sorsha.
"Of course, I would report anything that someone might have overheard about your travel plans," the mage continued. "For example, if someone heard you say you were traveling toward..."
It took a few moments for our little group to realize what the mage was offering to do, and even then, no one spoke for a moment.
"Philly," Darwin offered, "to find a portal mage."
The mage nodded. Then he and the two guards walked past us without saying another word.
"Let's get the horses and the ATV and get out of here before he has a chance to rethink his offer," Darwin said.
"We'll get the horses,"
the taller stable boy announced gleefully as he and the other stable hand darted back into the stables. Darwin jogged after them, and Freya did as well a moment later. Sorsha and I remained by the barn doors and kept an eye on the street, but other than the mage and the guards, no one else really seemed to understand what had happened. At least, not yet. We were mostly ignored by the townsfolk, who were too busy trying to save their town to pay us any heed, though a few smiled and threw a thank you our way as they ran by. The stable boys returned with the horses, and after Sorsha and I checked the straps, we both mounted and waited for the ATV to inch its way between the doors. I saw Darwin talk to the stable boys for a moment, and then he pointed away from the green and the crowd and drove toward the other side of the town at a slow pace. Sorsha nodded and trotted along behind them, and after one last look, I started to follow as well. The far end of the town had the same spiked barriers, but instead of a bridge and a river to cross, the road turned into a rutted path that climbed along the edge of the mountain. The guards on duty had stuck to their posts, though I wasn't sure if that was their training, or if they simply didn't realize just how bad things had been at the other end of town. A small group of people had sought shelter from the berserkers with these guards as well, and as our group first approached, I saw eyes open wide in fear.
"The raiders are gone," Darwin declared as he stopped near the guards. "So we're going to head out."
One of the guards looked doubtfully back toward the town, then glanced at the other guard.
"You want to leave, even with the berserkers around?" the guard asked.
"They're on the run," Darwin explained. "So it seems like a good time to leave before they can regroup and attack again. We want to get to the next town before they come back."
The two guards consulted each other in a quiet huddle, and I started to plot out ways we could move the barrier out of the way by ramming it with the ATV. Darwin must have had the same thoughts, because he started to inch the ATV forward until Freya tapped him on the arm.
"Hey, that's them!" someone called out. "That's the folks who helped fight off the berserkers!"
"You saved our town!"
a woman cried out happily.
"I don't know what that magic was, but thank you! Thank you so much!"
"We were happy to help," I replied as I looked at Sorsha.
"Why don't you stay?" one of the guards suggested. "What could another day or two hurt? And we could be sure the berserkers are really gone."
"Sorry," Darwin said with a shake of his head, "but we've got a long journey ahead of us, and we need to press on."
"You guys are amazing,"
a boy of about 13 declared as he tried to squirm away from the woman holding his hand.
I saw you run toward the green when everyone else ran away.
Hey, the shorter guard protested.
Here,
a young woman said as she stepped toward the ATV and held out a pouch to Freya.
My mother started this set, and I've added to it. It's protection stones to keep you safe. It'll protect you on your travels.
Oh, thanks. But won't you need it?
I can start another,
the woman replied with a smile.
I suspect you'll need it more than me.
Freya accepted the pouch, then glanced back at me and Sorsha.
Well, Hex will probably need it more than me,
the rabbit woman said with a smile.
He seems to be a magnet for trouble.
I started to protest, but I clamped my mouth shut instead as everyone turned to look at me.
Hex is the reason we're here,
Sorsha added loudly enough for the crowd to hear.
And he's the reason we were able to save the town.
Three cheers for Hex,
the taller guard called out. The crowd started to cheer, and I tipped my hat as gallantly as I could. Both Sorsha and Freya were smiling, and even Darwin looked pleased. The ex-trooper signaled me closer, and I brought my horse alongside the ATV.
Like I said, good shooting, kid,
Darwin said, just loud enough for me to hear.
A little more practice and you'll be picking off bad guys like a pro.
I smiled as I soaked in the older man's praise and the happy smiles of Freya and Sorsha. The crowd was still cheering, even as the guards finally moved the barricade out of the way so the ATV could pass through. I winked at Sorsha, then urged my horse after the ATV, eager to be on the road once again and to see what other adventures the road had to offer. End of book 2.